When Colin asked me to speak about nursing assessments of a new chronic pain patient, I thought, yeah, I can do that. It's what I do every day out in my little community hospital. And then when I came to sit down and do it, Candy's slides of the grandmother and the eggs came to mind, thinking, well, yes, I'm going to be telling people what they already know. So I've changed it a little bit in that we're going to look at some of the controversies around it and the competencies of nurses that are out there doing this sort of work. Although I will still go over my structure of my assessment with my new patient in my primary care chronic pain clinic. That's a little picture of where I work. We're very lucky in South Manchester that we have a dedicated unit to do our chronic pain work in. And within that little unit, we have our own theatre, our own C-arm for image intensifying. We do all our outpatient work in there. We run the pain management programme. So when a patient comes to our unit, they see the same people every time, be that the reception staff, the admin staff, the nursing staff, and the consultants are usually around as well. So I think that we're very, very lucky to have that unit. And then there's a picture there of the bigger picture that we never get to see because we're just locked in there on a Monday morning, less out on a Friday. As you've just been told, my background is that I was a sister on the neurosurgical unit at Salford Royal Hope Hospital in Salford for 12 years, and that's where I developed my interest in chronic pain. We had a lot of patients on there that went for spinal surgery because we took the orthopaedic spinal patients as well, and came back months down the line having been experiencing the pain that they had prior to their surgery, and that's where I got my interest from. I then went and trained as an associate pain nurse with the acute pain team in Salford, and wanted to set up more of a chronic pain sort of clinic within the neurosurgical unit, but management at the time were very against that, so I then moved on. I did a role as an acute pain sister for 3 years in Warrington. Then I took a more junior role as a chronic pain sister at North Manchester General Hospital until the post that I'm in now came up, and I applied and was lucky, very lucky to get it. I've been in post now for just over 4 years. My role there is probably very different to a lot of the other nurses that are here today because we've got this self-contained unit. A lot of my role is down to management of that unit as well, and that takes up a lot of my time. I coordinate the multidisciplinary team, I coordinate the theatre sessions, the outpatient sessions, and ensure that those are staffed and managed. I manage the day-to-day running of the unit. Any problems in the unit amongst staff becomes my problem on a daily basis. I'm a nurse manager for a team of 6 nurses in the chronic pain unit. They're not all specialist nurses. Some of the nurses work in theatre, some are in recovery, and a couple of them do have specialist roles as well. We have a very good administrative team, without which I think the whole system in any chronic pain department would fail. And I have a lot of work more recently working with assisting with targets and waiting list management, which is becoming a bigger problem by the day. Our targets are coming down. Our trust target now is down to 8 weeks for new patients, and it's down to 12 weeks for procedures, and trying to manage that when we were already just having breached clinics and trying to manage the numbers we had has just been phenomenal, but we're getting there. Clinically, my role is that I have 2 nurse-led drug and procedure review clinics within secondary care. I run an opiate review clinic, and consultants refer patients to me when they've decided that they need starting on opiates. It's a very robust system, and the patients are reviewed frequently every 2 weeks until they are stable on the medication or off the medication, and we have this very robust pro forma, that if any of the nursing staff out there want a copy of that, I'm happy to send it you electronically. I also run a primary care based chronic pain service, which we call a tier 2 service. This was set up about 3 years ago with one of the consultants and myself. We felt that there was a need for it, and we felt that by setting this clinic up ourselves, we kept control of what was happening in primary care in our area, and we felt at the time that if we didn't do it, then it would have gone out to a private provider at the time. So it allowed us to keep some control over that. And it's proven very successful. I'll go into a little bit more detail about the clinic shortly. I also work as first contact. We don't see inpatient chronic pain patients, so we don't have any ward rounds. We don't go out to the patients on the wards, although I do work very closely with the acute pain sister, and we do manage some of the patients together in that way. But I'm usually the first contact for advice via telephone for hospital medical staff and nurses. And I take a lead role on most of the audit within the unit and some of the research and most of the education for the nursing staff. So, new patient triage in the Tier 2 clinic. All primary care referrals go through a regional booking management system and then fall on my lap. So I refer all GP referrals in south of Manchester, and I triage those patients either to my own primary care clinic or to the secondary care service. We set up a very, very good triage process when we set up the clinic, and like most things, the triage form fell flat. We couldn't get the GPs to get the patients to fill the form in. The patients inevitably forgot to send it back if we did it by post, or they didn't pay the postage, and then we got letters from the post office that they had a stack of them this big waiting for us to collect. So it didn't work as we would have liked it to have done. And we were quite robust, and it's very important that the triage process of these patients is done properly, because that is my safety net, really. But it doesn't work, so my safety net has gone. I very often just triage the patients from the GP letters, and I'm sure most of you know that these are never informative enough from the GPs. And I was talking to somebody at lunchtime, and I went out to see a lady that I thought was going to be a fairly straightforward chronic back pain in her 30s. And when I opened the door, there was a skeleton sat on the chair. She was an anorexic lady that was under the psychiatrist. She'd got personality disorders and many things. And I was just like, your worst nightmare. And my first words to that lady were, you should not be here. I should not be seeing you here today. And you've got to be very honest with these patients and explain where the systems do fall down when they do. I also take direct referrals from other Tier 2 services, and in South Manchester we have a musculoskeletal service, we have a joint assessment service, we have a rheumatology Tier 2 service, and we have a podiatry Tier 2 service as well, and I take referrals from those, and vice versa, I can refer patients into those directly. And we have very good links with the GPs. We go out to a lot of the GP surgeries doing lunchtime meetings, and I've got to hold my hands up that this is down to the pharmaceutical companies that get us in there, and you know, have very good links with the GPs. But it's getting better, that our links, certainly with secondary care through the primary care service, are improving as well. Limitations of the Tier 2 service. There are limited treatments that we can offer the patients there. Obviously, pharmacological problems, pharmacological treatments are available, and I haven't done my nurse prescribing course, mainly because a lot of the treatments that we were using when I started this clinic, I couldn't have prescribed as a prescriber anyway. So I do medication advice notes to the GPs, and we keep the one prescriber within the service. And that's very much the same in the secondary care service as well. Our consultants don't often do prescriptions and give them to the patients. They usually ask the GP to prescribe the drugs. I'm a lone practitioner. I wasn't originally. One of the consultants set the service up with me and ran the clinic with me for about 6 months. And we had a GP with a special interest as well. His special interest wasn't quite what we thought it was, and he no longer works in the service. So I've now become a lone practitioner, so safety net number two has gone. I have no psychologist. The GPs don't tend to assess these patients for psychological problems before they come to the service, so I have no indication through their letter that that's what they've got, and that can be very problematic. But I can refer these patients straight on to secondary care to our psychologist, and very often do that, and I have good links with her and see her regularly at work. We have limited review appointments because the primary care trust isn't really interested in how many times you see these patients or, you know, how well you do. All they're interested in is that they pay £7,000 a year for my time in primary care, and they save themselves about £50,000 a year based on new patient appointments in secondary care. So the review appointments aren't a priority to them, whereas to myself I feel that they are as important as the new patient appointments. Tier 2 philosophy, from PCT point of view, therefore, is treat and discharge, or advise and discharge. And we all know that chronic pain patients aren't always like that. And if that were the case in the Tier 2 service, those patients 6 weeks later would be knocking on the door of the secondary care service anyway. As I say, I wasn't going to go through my assessment, but I will do shortly. I think some of the things that I've gathered from speaking to people at lunchtime is that, you know, the controversies surrounding a nurse assessing a new chronic pain patient. And I am aware of those controversies. I am aware of the problems that people see, and certainly a lot of medical practitioners see there being problems of nurses assessing new pain patients. But I feel that at the end of the day, these patients have been seen by a medical practitioner. They have been seen by their GP. And we have a very, very clear-cut directory of services which tells the GPs what they can and cannot refer to our service. And within that, the patients must be the problem must be investigated to rule out any organic problem. There are very strict guidelines for them to adhere to. If they've got a psychiatric history, if they're under any sort of psychotherapy, they shouldn't be coming to this service. But again, it doesn't always work like that. They still refer, and they don't look at the directory of services. My assessment, I feel, and I hope that's what you take home with you today, is not dissimilar to a consultant's assessment of the new chronic pain patients. I feel that the important things with these patients, and certainly if we get the right patients that's been triaged, is that we give an extremely good explanation of their problems, that we discuss their treatment goals with them, and we've got clear-cut treatment goals at the end of the session, that we're honest with the patients, and I'm certainly honest with my patients in my limitations of my work in the Tier 2 chronic pain service, and I do accept my own limitations as a nurse and not as a medical practitioner. So my assessment is very structured. It's based around the assessment of the three consultants that I work with, who all do things very differently. So as a nurse trying to learn how to do these things and to get the competencies and the skills that you need, it's very difficult because you can sit in a clinic with one consultant who does it this way, you can sit in another clinic with another consultant and they do it an entirely different way. So my assessment is taken from a mixture of what I felt was the best of those three, of the three consultants that I work with. So I structure my assessments very clearly. But I start my assessment by explaining to the patients why I'm going to be asking them the questions that I'm going to be asking them. I found that when I sat in on consultant assessments, that the patients were very reluctant. When you're asking them about the social history, when you're asking them about the psychological history, and whether they had any depression in the past and things, that they were very wary and very cagey about giving their answers. And I feel that by explaining to them why I would be asking these questions first, I get a much more open and honest answer from the patients. And the patient then understands the reasons for the questions. And I feel that I personally get more out of my patients in that setting for those reasons. And the continuity of the care, if the patients are then referred on to secondary care, I usually see them for review after they've had a procedure. I directly list patients to our consultants' injection list. So I will decide the injection that they need, and I'm usually right, I've got to say. They've not come out hammering me yet because they're saying, why have you listed this patient for this? So I do have the facility to directly list those patients. They don't then have to go to secondary care and see the consultant again. So I start off, once I've explained to the patient why I'm going to be asking them the questions, I take a full social history. We go into relationship status, family status, the hobbies, their interests, the work, the social life, whether they drink, whether they smoke, whether they take any recreational drugs. And I'm not going to start telling you the importance of all these things because I'm sure this is something that you are all more than well aware of. I go through the patient's 24-hour day with them, and I think going through the patient's 24-hour day with them is a very good way of letting them see their own quality of life and realising where some of the problems might lie with them. And, you know, patients will sit there and at the end of it they'll say, I don't really do very much at all, do I? And they've learnt it themselves. So we go through the sleep pattern, what time they're up in the morning, what their activities of daily living, how they spend the day, what they're doing, whether they do any housework, whether they do any cooking, what time they retire to bed, and whether the sleep pattern is disturbed. I go through the previous medical history of their illnesses, their operations, whether they've got any long-term conditions, and whether any of the family have any long-term conditions. We ask them about the family history of that, because they could sometimes patients will have the fears there anyway that they're going to develop the same sort of problems, and that can sometimes just give you a link into what their fears are, and we go through their current medications. Psychological history, again, we ask them about history of depression, whether there's any family history of depression, history about any anxiety disorders, significant events in their life, personality disorders, previous medication that they may have been on for any psychological problems, and we do psychological scoring again, which is part of the triage form. Some patients do turn up at the clinic with the form, and that's all very good, very well and good. Some patients don't come with the forms, and there's not always time in the clinic, although, like Candy, I'm very privileged to have an hour's appointment with my new patients. But there's not always that time to go through all those forms with them. But they are handy to have and significant. I talk to them about the pain history, how long they've had the pain, their onset of pain and cause of the pain if they know it. I ask them to describe their pain to me. We look at their visual analog scores and whether the pain is at best and what it is at worst. That tells us whether their pain is stable or not. We ask them what makes their pain better, what makes their pain worse, and any past treatments that they've had that have been effective or ineffective in the past. I go through the red flags in my mind. I do write them down, and I do document that I've thought about these, and I hope these aren't too different to Andy's this morning. I ask them about a previous history of cancer, whether they have any night sweats. Obviously the age comes into play again, whether they've got any bladder or bowel or any of the neurological symptoms, thoracic pain again, the onset of the pain, whether it was sudden or whether it was slow duration. We look at weight loss, comorbidity, recent infections, progressive neurological deficit and trauma. And I don't think I've left anything out there. And I do, as a nurse, you know, I am aware that red flags can be missed, and I'm sure as pain clinicians yourself, you know, anybody can miss a red flag. I can see a patient for review once they've started treatment with a consultant, and they can be coming back to me for review assessment following procedures for anything up to a couple of years. You know, any patient can develop a red flag at any time. Just because they've been seen and assessed the first time doesn't mean they're not going to go on to develop that. I do a limited examination with my patients. I'm not a physiotherapist, and if I want a full spinal assessment of a patient, I will refer to physiotherapy for that. But I feel that I can, by asking the patients, looking at the posture, looking at the range of movements, looking at the power, I can test the reflexes. I've got my neurosurgical background, which I think is very helpful to me in this primary care situation. I can test the reflexes, I know what I'm looking for, I know what an abnormal reflex will suggest to me. I can test patients' sensory problems or to see if they've got any sensory problems, and obviously look for any obvious abnormalities for type like CRPS type patients. I then sit down with my patients and have a discussion with them, and we talk to them about their own model of their pain, what they think's going on in their mind, what they feel the problem is, and then I give them my model for their pain. I find that this part of my consultation probably takes up the most of my time, and very often, even though I have an hour's consultation, if I get a problem patient, then I can be there for longer than that. I explain the nature of chronic pain to the patients. I talk to them about pacing and goal setting and exercising, and we look at the treatment options that are available to them as well. As I say, tier 2 treatments are limited. We can offer education and counselling, we can offer physiotherapy, and our physiotherapists there do acupuncture and hydrotherapy. We offer a TENS service, we offer other pharmacological treatments. I don't start opiates in chronic pain in the tier 2 chronic pain service unless the patient has been started on them by the GP, and then I will just directly refer them to the secondary care opiate clinic there. But I won't start new opiates in the tier 2 service. I direct the list of patients, as I say, for injections to the multidisciplinary team or for the pain management program directly from primary care. Although our pain management program only runs twice a year, and with the 18-week pathway now, that's going to cause us quite a few problems. I can refer to psychology, as I say, and I can refer to the other tier two services, which are very handy. I can also refer to other specialities, and have referred patients directly to neurosurgery to another trust. I can offer follow-up and support, and I can order investigations in tier two. And I probably, as a clinician assessing new chronic pain patients and being aware that I am a nurse, I probably order more MRI scans than most of our consultants would do. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know, but for my own peace of mind, if I'm unsure, I will scan a patient and then I can sit down and go through that scan with the patient and explain to them the problems or the lack of any organic pathology there. I do refer on to secondary care, and we probably refer about 40% of patients from the primary care service onto secondary care. Those are mainly for injections, psychology, or the pain management programme, and the links between the two do work extremely well. I think one of the things that we need to look at and discuss is the competencies of nurses that are assessing these patients. And I started searching the internet looking for some clear guidance on this to do this talk, and there is no clear guidance out there for nurses working in chronic pain. The British Pain Society did write some guidelines for competencies for the nurses working in chronic pain in 2002, but those have now been withdrawn and are being reassessed at the moment. The British Pain Society are working with the Royal College of Nursing to look at those guidelines and to write some new guidelines. I started looking at job descriptions and titles along the lines of Agenda for Change. And again, there is nothing very clear. You can be called a clinical nurse specialist, an advanced nurse practitioner, a nurse specialist. It doesn't matter. Your role can be very varied under those titles. And there's nothing within Agenda for Change, although there are core competencies within the key skills framework that will say to what level you should be educated. There is nothing really that gives you any guidance on how long you should have been doing what you are doing before you can start seeing new patients, and there is nothing out there at all. And I think that's quite sad, really. I think certainly as a nurse we'll welcome the new guidelines that should come out later this year. My own opinion of what nurses assessing new patients in chronic pain should have is that you should be a registered general nurse. You should have post-registration courses relevant to the subject, and a nurse coming along with a degree in nursing or in nursing management, I don't think is relevant to seeing patients, chronic pain patients, as a new patient. I think they need to have 3 years' experience at a senior level of working in a chronic pain clinic alongside consultants and other practitioners. And I think they should have or be working towards a master's degree in pain management, and I think that's invaluable. I undertook my master's degree and I got so much out of it and gave myself so much confidence as well to do what I do now, and I would suggest to anybody to do that. Nurse prescribing, it depends how you run your clinic, it depends what you want to do. It does give you some governance behind what you're doing when you're advising GPs and things about drugs, so it can be handy to have, but I don't think it is definitely necessary. I think management experience is important. I think you've got to have some experience of managing people, and certainly, you know, working in the Withenshaw area, it's like being on a set of Shameless at times. And when you get these people in your clinic, they can be quite frightening, and you do need to know how to manage them. And you've got to be confident at what you do. I know when I first started and I had the consultant working alongside me, I didn't feel confident. I thought I would have been, and I didn't. And it's taken me a long time to get to where I am, but I can now feel confident seeing these new patients. And there are nights when I go home and I have sleepless nights wondering about patients. And an example of this is a man that I had in clinic not that long ago. He was in his 40s, quite fit and healthy, chronic back pain for about 6 to 7 years. He'd been investigated by his GP, he'd had some x-rays done. He'd been seen by physiotherapists, he'd gone through the works. Came to the clinic, and he was just one of those men that you just knew you weren't going to move on. And I scanned him to actually moving forward, to take him forward so that we could perhaps get him onto a pain management program and moving forward. And his scan actually came back showing that he had a 5-centimetre paravertebral tumour. There was no indication of that when I saw that man and when I examined him, and our consultant has seen him since and examined him and came to the same conclusion, because I was extremely worried about that, that I had missed something. But there was no indication of that pathology from the initial consultation or from the consultant's consultation afterwards. So we are all unhuman. I think as a nurse, you've got to accept your limitations. You know, I'm not trying to be a doctor. I'm not trying to be a physiotherapist practitioner assessing, you know, spines. That is not my role. I'm there to look at the whole picture of the patient. And I think as a nurse, I'm very privileged that my time management is my own, and I'm not rushing off to do an anaesthetic list somewhere else. If a patient takes longer, I've got that time. And I think time with these patients is very precious. And I feel that that is one of the things that I can give to my patients and to my clinic. And I would encourage anybody, any nurses out there that are thinking of moving on to this, you know, to go ahead and do it. It's a very fulfilling role. Most importantly, you've got to have a very thick skin, and you've got to have extremely good coping skills at times.